you don't work really, really, really hard in this whole marketing piece and the whole communication structure to find and encourage and incentivize your fundraisers, you're not going to make money. But if you do it well, you will.
You're listening to Small But Mighty, the podcast of the Small Nonprofits Alliance, the online hub for Australia's small charities.
Hey everyone, I'm Bianca, founder and CEO of the Small Nonprofits Alliance. Today on Small But Mighty, I'm joined by Tanya Burston, a social entrepreneur and businesswoman who founded Australia's number one online fundraising platform, mycause.com.au. She is a three-time Telstra Business Award finalist and a top 50 women fintech leader. The MyCause platform supports changemakers and charity partners to create a positive impact through tailored fundraising solutions. Since being established in 2009, MyCause has grown to now having over 6,000 charity partners and has raised more than $140 million for charities and Australian community groups. I'm here on the land of the Wurundjeri people, the place where I grew up and now live and work, and I'd like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which you reside today also. This is our first podcast for 2022, and I'm thrilled to have Tanya with me here today. Hi, Tanya. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Bianca. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us again on our Small But Mighty podcast. It's great to have you back. And it's a big new year ahead of us all. 2022 is just ticked over. We do know it's been a challenging year for many charities over the last couple of years with the pandemic and ongoing lockdowns and disruptions to fundraising programs and plans. And many charities have had to make a switch or change what they're doing and move towards digital fundraising. Can you tell us a little bit about the growth that you've seen on your platform, mycause.com.au?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, you're right about it being an unbelievably disruptive couple of years, you know, starting with the pandemic really in March 2020 and, you know, the shock that we all felt. And certainly that was like a bit of a bomb to the charity sector, particularly because a lot of charities at that time relied on third-party events for their peer-to-peer fundraising. So what that means is there'll be a massive fun run of, say, 10,000 people, and a lot of charities rely on their supporters fundraising, creating an online fundraising page, getting sponsored in those third-party events. In addition to that, a lot of charities relied on their own outdoor events. So whether it was a walk or a bike ride or a fun run or what have you, that was all cancelled in the peer-to-peer space. Peer-to-peer meaning when you create a fundraising page and people sponsor you. But also all of their in-person events that are outside of the peer-to-peer sphere. So we're talking about your galas, balls, you know, other sort of ticketed events. I mean, even a movie night, you know. So we all know that everything was heavily disrupted. So the question was, did people or did charities pivot? And if so, how did they do that? And some did it better than others, some did it faster than others, but there's no doubt that it had to happen because, you know, it's almost been 2 years with very limited in-person events. So the first thing that we've seen, because, of course, we are in the peer-to-peer space, we're not in the sort of gala, ball or event space, so I can't really talk to that. But in the peer-to-peer space, what we've seen is charities creating virtual events. So a virtual event is basically where they're asking their supporters to do the same thing they would have done in their in-person event, but do it themselves. So let's say it's a 20K walk. It's can you please do your 20K walk in your own neighbourhood or under your own steam. We're not all going to be meeting together. And in fact, some of the major third-party events, the very big fun runs, have actually done the same thing, you know, do the half marathon in your own space, in your own time. So I think the outcome of that is sort of twofold. Number one, you do lose a cohort of people that want to do that running because they want to be with that group of people and they want that excitement and they want to all be together in the T-shirt. And so, sure, you lose a bit of that. Conversely, you gain a little bit. You know, you're actually able to think a little bit outside the square and gain supporters to do that activity and get sponsored outside of that geographical area.
Yeah.
So that means, you know, if you've always met in Carlton Gardens, for example, for your, you know, walk and you've had 1,000 people, now perhaps if you think outside the square, you can have mini walks all over the state, you know, or wherever you are, wherever you're working, nationally, if you're a national charity, you know, participating in this activity. So we, in answer to your question, and it's a long way to get there, but in answer to your question, we have seen a definite uptick in fundraising activity in virtual events, and organisations that are doing it well are making a lot of money. So I guess the question is, what does doing it well mean?
Yeah, definitely. So peer-to-peer obviously sounds like it is still really popular, as it has been. Peer-to-peer fundraising has been a, you know, really popular method of fundraising in like the last 5-10 years, but it sounds like it is still popular, just that shift to how the actual event is hosted. Rather than being a physical event, it's that virtual peer-to-peer event that's really taking off.
I think so, yes, that's definitely true. I think that the couple of things. Number one, fundraising teams within charities have become more experienced and expert at peer-to-peer fundraising. I mean, 10 years ago, they didn't really know how to do it. Now the teams inside charities are really experts, having done this so many times, having had so much experience, having learnt about it as well. They know what they're doing. And I think it really comes down now to the marketing. It is all about marketing. How are you communicating with your supporters? How are you encouraging your supporters to raise money for you? How are you incentivizing your supporters to raise money for you? Are you, you know, so that can be, that would be multi-channel marketing. So it's talking to them on social media. It's running social media ads. It's text messaging them. It's personally emailing them. It might even be phoning them. So putting together all of those channels in a really targeted, intensive marketing campaign is what's getting these off the ground. And what you could say is arguably it always should have been like this. But
definitely.
I think the understanding now, if you don't work really, really, really hard in this whole marketing piece and the whole communication structure to find and encourage and incentivize your fundraisers, you're not going to make money. But if you do it well, you will. So I think that is sort of really the key to success. It used to be, where do we close the road? How do we organise this? You know, where do we put the coffee truck? Forget about that. That's not what it's about anymore. Right now it's about the attraction and the journey of those supporters. And there's some brilliant examples out there of charities that have created events and a lot of hype around those events. They've branded the events well. So we're talking about good branding, good imagery, proper logos, proper, you know, fundraising websites with good tech, and then that really, really strong communications marketing piece.
Yeah, I think you're so right about that. Probably was always the really important thing of these events, peer-to-peer events. And if I think back to ones that I've known of pre-COVID, the ones that have been most successful are the ones that really engage those supporters along the journey and tell stories and inspire them, which really, when we think about it, like you said, that's the heart of fundraising in all its essence, whether it's digital or virtual or anything. It's that storytelling. It's that ability to connect and communicate with people. So it's probably heartening to hear that that is actually really now what's pushing people through and really getting those great results for them. I know last year, I think it was last year now, we did a podcast interview with Liz Dawes from the Robert Connor Dawes Foundation, and talked to her about Connor's Run and how that was a really big event that they did down in the Bayside suburbs of Melbourne, and then COVID they had to make it virtual, but they actually went really from strength to strength because they had a team of people that supported the people that registered and helped them on their way to doing exactly those things that you said around making sure that they understand what they're doing, making sure they're incentivized to fundraise, or just connecting them and then helping them along that journey so they don't feel like they're doing it alone when in effect, if you're doing a virtual event, you are doing it alone.
I think that's actually a really interesting example because fantastic charity, the RCD Foundation. And what is really interesting about them is even before COVID, they were doing an amazing job. I, in fact, even did their 18K run. But what is interesting about about them is they're not, they are a bit now, but they weren't at that time a rock star charity. They were a new charity. So we're not talking about somebody with a really big name and a big supporter base, but obviously they've built that up over time. Yep. So the first piece in their puzzle was that they actually made their event quite hard, like made it worthwhile. You know, 18 kilometres is a big deal. Mm. You know, it wasn't a walk around the park.
Yep.
So I think also organisations need to consider what their event is as well. And that, I guess, is kind of part of the marketing because you want to excite people to come along. So I think making it a big deal was a good move for them to start off with. And they've obviously built strength to strength, and there's lots of examples like that. So that, I think that they're a real shining light to explain, you know, you don't have to be coming from, you know, your massive well-known brand name charities to make something successful.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I think that is really important for small charities, which is our audience here, obviously, on Small But Mighty. But I think it's important for those charities to hear those stories as well, because otherwise you do hear about the Cancer Council, their what they do, or, you know, there's a lot of talk at the moment about the McGrath Foundation with the breast cancer at the Test Cricket, those sorts of really larger things. But it's really good for small charities to hear some of those examples. Tanya, what are some of the other things that you're seeing charities do in terms of shifting to digital over the past year or two? Are there other things that they're doing besides peer-to-peer?
Yeah, definitely. And by the way, every charity should be doing a mix of fundraising, because fundraising is like a puzzle or a pie, and organisations should be doing all parts of that fundraising puzzle, but in different different organisations will have different amounts in each piece of the pie. So some will be really big on your peer-to-peer events, others will be really big on, you know, appeals and campaigns and so on. But what we're seeing is a massive growth in digital appeal. So an appeal is where an organisation fundraises themselves. So traditionally you'd think of an end of financial year appeal. But organisations now, what they're doing is creating appeals outside of end of financial year and branding them. So earlier I talked about the branding of an event. So it's very similar. You need a fantastic brand and a fantastic name of the event, amazing graphics. And then what we're helping charities with is promoting that campaign, or what we're calling them these days is giving days, in a really short time frame, and using tactics to attract and incentivize those donors. So we've talked about incentivization and attraction in the case of fundraisers for your event. This is now trying to incentivize and attract donors. So who are those donors? Well, the first people that you're promoting your campaign or giving day to are people on your database, your donors. Who are they? Well, they're people that have donated to you in the past, or they're people that have donated to somebody else's fundraising page. So we call them third-party donors. So Bianca goes for a fun run, her friends donate to the page, then the charity is able to market to those donors and try to convert them from that being a third-party donor to being a direct donor to the campaign. So that's what we would call like a soft lead. So it's much easier to convert somebody that's donated to someone else's fundraising page and is aware of the charity than it is to find somebody completely new. It's kind of like the difference between a cold call, if you like, and a warm call. So that's why all of these things kind of working together, it's like they connect, because the peer-to-peer fundraising or the other events, ticketed events and so on, bring on the donors or the data or the participants, and then we're marketing to them for the appeal. And we're also trying to grow the base as well. Like, so that's called donor acquisition while we're doing it. But it's all about the marketing. We're using multi-channel marketing. We're using direct mail. We're using phones, so they would be considered legacy channels. We're using modern channels, which would be social media, of course, digital media, which means advertising. We're using email, of course, and a fantastic brand, and using gamification. Gamification is the way that we're incentivizing the donors, and usually that's with matching, dollar matching. So that's where the major donors match the community donors. So, for example, every donation might be doubled. So your target might be $100,000. You might have $50,000 from major donors. So every person that donates, their donation is doubled to a target of $100,000. So these are the sorts of campaigns that have become very, very popular. We call them matched giving days. And you can run these with or without matching, but the point is that you're using that really strong marketing, short time frame, incentivization, and so on and so forth. Mm. And from time to time, using fundraising champions as well, which are similar to your peer-to-peer fundraisers, to spread the word.
Yeah.
So we've had some fantastic success with small charities.
Yeah. Can you share some of those examples with us?
Yeah, for sure. So we've been working with a wonderful small charity called the Prader-Willi Foundation for a couple of years now, and they've literally got less than one full-time staff member. And the first time they came to us, they had a very small matching pool. So matching pool means the major donors. And they'd never raised, you know, more than $25,000 ever in a campaign. Anyway, their first campaign, they absolutely blew it out of the water, and they raised, I think, pretty close to $100,000 using this very small pool to start with. But what we did and how we helped them was we used the families, with permission, obviously, to be the fundraising champions and the face of the campaign. And those families were highly motivated to go out and seek donations, usually families of small children with the condition. And the success of the campaign, we had a beautifully branded, it was called Finding 15, because it's about the 15 chromosome. And we used the children in the marketing, and we used all of those channels above. I don't think we did our phone for them, but we used all of the channels that I mentioned earlier. The following year, on the back of what they'd done in the first year, they were able to significantly increase their major donor pool. Mm. Because major donors, and in fact community donors, all want to be part of success.
Mm.
When they see something successful, when they understand the concept, when they see it demonstrated, they want to be part of that, and they're willing to be part of that because they believe in it.
Hmm.
So their major donor pool that was increased to $100,000 for the second year. So they were able to raise close to $200,000 in the next year. So that's a fantastic example of a very, very, very small organisation really getting their mojo on about how to fundraise. And they didn't have to close any roads. They didn't have to book any spaces. Yeah, they had to work hard. Yeah, there was a lot of marketing. But they've built their database. They've acquired a lot of donors through using the champions.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are reaching out to the network.
Were they, that was a 120, like a 24-hour giving day appeal that they ran once a year over 2 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I'm hearing you say as well is still that importance around planning and looking, you know, this concept that I repeat often, whether it's on this podcast or in workshops that I present, that fundraising is a marathon, it's not a sprint. So even when you're talking about this 24-hour giving day period, that is quite a short, that's really short space of time. But when you think about the work that needs to go into it and planning to do this one and accepting that the first one might be smaller and it might not be exactly where we want to get to, but we know that there's this long-term vision, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, that's right. A 24-hour campaign is actually a two-week campaign. So the soft launch starts 2 weeks prior to the campaign.
Yeah.
And then and we accept donations up until the end of the 24 hours. And 24 hours starts on a bit of a clock, and it's the last 24 hours of the campaign, and that's obviously when the most donations come in. But what we're doing is we're building up to that crescendo on that day, and then we pretty much close it a few days after that for donations. So it also does incentivize people to sort of get their skates on and get the money, and if they want to see it doubled, and that doubling or tripling, in fact, or even quadrupling, depending on the matching pool, that's all part of the strategy. It is very, very incentivizing for donors. They really, really do like it.
Yeah.
So what I say to charities who are thinking about this kind of giving day, I say to them, it's not an either or. You can do this as well. But you need to sort of consider, the first thing a lot of organizations say is, I don't know where to find my major donors. I don't know who they are. I don't have any money. So the first thing we do is kind of talk through the major donors. And often those major donors are actually there on your database. You just haven't looked. They're the people that have maybe given you a couple of thousand dollars at some point in the last year or two. They're the first people you go to. The next people that you go to are perhaps any organisations, corporate businesses, foundations that might have donated to your events in the past. A lot of organisations might have galas or balls, and they've gone and sought sponsorship from organisations. Well, they're your major donors, so they're people that, or entities that you could go to and ask. Even some grants can be used as matching funds. And then there's the approach to high net worth donors and so on. So it's kind of a whole strategy, but I think the training and the organisations getting used to and having a system to talk to their major donors and not be frightened. I know sometimes it's actually a bit scary to ring and follow up with the major donors. Like, I really understand that. But once it's done a few times, you kind of get used to it. And I am talking about small organisations. A big organisation will have a whole department for this.
Mm.
But big organisations have their own problems. Like, they'll have a whole department. They might have three people that only work on major donors, but the problem at their organisation might be that they're really siloed, and they might say to the part of the organisation that's doing the giving day, oh, you can't have our major donors.
Yeah.
We don't want to bother them too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that plenty of times. They're over here. I mean, it makes you want to tear your hair out. It's ridiculous.
Mm.
But so for a small organisation, the problem is different. It's like, oh, I'm a bit nervous to get on the phone. I don't really want to call them. But it does work, and it's definitely worth approaching and learning how to talk to major donors.
Yeah, definitely. Tanya, just a question that's come to mind now just for me, but the giving days that you talk about, how do you see them as different to a crowdfunding campaign, which is obviously something that charities have done in an online way over the last few years as well? How do you see the two being different?
It's kind of like a crowdfunding campaign on steroids, really. You can run a giving day for a project, which traditionally you think about crowdfunding for a project, you know, like we're trying to raise money for a bus or a this or that.
Yeah.
An appeal campaign, crowdfunding campaign, giving day are really the same, are really almost all the same things. But I guess a giving day for us at my cause anyway is that we have structure around it and certain principles and certain strategy. And the strategy will be around the matching. It'll be around the timing. It'll be around the marketing and the branding of the campaign. With a crowdfunding campaign, I mean, you can similarly have great branding and strategy, obviously. You probably wouldn't have matching. So that might be one of the big ones. Also, a crowdfunding campaign is not necessarily on a short time frame.
Yeah.
But we kind of believe that you really do need a firm end date, because otherwise things just peter out anyway. And I think it's really important that you have the trust of your donors, that you say it is going to end on a particular date and you do end it.
Yeah.
So because if you don't follow through with that, then they're always able to sort of think, oh, I'll get my money in later.
Yeah. I think for crowdfunding as well, a lot of the the purpose for raising funds for crowdfunding, like you said, it's for a thing, it's for a bus or it's for a project or some specific thing. Whereas it sounds like when you're doing a giving day, it is like an appeal where you can be raising money for your organization, for the cause itself.
That's right.
For something specific.
For your mission,
Which I think a lot of charities, especially smaller charities, often need that flexibility in when they ask for donations. They don't want it tied to a particular thing because they still have the running cost and delivering of their services and programs to the communities that they help.
Yeah, that's right. If you are running a campaign on a project, you have to be careful because you will have to put those funds to that project. Yeah. So untied funds are preferable.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good exercise as well, to find a way to tell your story and explain your mission, you know, whether that's, you know, we're trying to, we just did one for a children's cancer charity in WA, and, well, you'd think that would be easy, wouldn't you? But it is kind of competitive in that space, and it was also for research. So they came up with a really just smart, quick campaign brand, which was Beat Child Cancer.
Mm.
You know, and who doesn't want to help that?
Yeah. So. I think those being creative in that way you tell that. So when you talk about the branding of it, that's what you're talking about. Like, what's that key proposition? How are we going to get this message across in a really short, snappy way at this point in time? So I think that is really important.
Exactly.
What are some of the key mistakes that you could possibly caution small charities against as they do start to do more of this digital fundraising?
Yeah, look, good question. I think the first thing is not all types of campaigns or events are right for all types of organisations. So you've got to pick what's right for you and what works for you in terms of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So capacity, how many people, volunteers paid or otherwise, do you have to pull off the activity? And also your database, which has to be the most important thing. So, for example, you really can't go ahead and run a giving day if you have 400 people in your database. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
You're not going to magically find new donors. And I think that that's a really important thing. Donors don't fall out of the sky. There is no magic here. There's just hard work. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to do that database building, you know, that kind of grunt work. So what is that? That is every time you sell a ticket to a talk online, that you're gathering first name, last name, email address and mobile phone number. You know, that is really key data, because if you're running a giving day or a crowdfunding campaign or whatever it might be, you need to be able to send an email and send an SMS in order to request donations.
Yeah.
It's also having a really good peer-to-peer fundraising calendar. So, okay, you're not the biggest organisation and you don't have a massive fund run, that's okay. You can, you know, if you can still have five people riding for you, running for you, walking for you, that's five fundraisers who are each bringing 20 donors. So there you go, there's another 100 donors on your database. So it's all, it's all of those steps to build up the database. It's obviously building connections with potential major donors, but I think that the main thing is really building the database, whether that's a membership piece or whether it's sort of a quid pro quo, like perhaps you have something to offer that you offer for free and what you get back is their data. So we put on a talk every week online or every month online. We have a fantastic speaker talking about this and that. It's completely free, but you register with your information.
Yeah.
You know, obviously at Michael's we're huge proponents of peer-to-peer, because peer-to-peer is the ultimate crowdfunding. It's the ultimate kind of onion where you only need one person, which is the fundraiser, and they're attracting the donors. And the first party of donors are their immediate friends and family and, you know, close contacts. Doesn't that have a different meaning these days? Close contacts. Mm-hmm. And then their casual contacts. Sorry. Pun intended there. And then, you know, their clubs and associations or church or groups or what have you that they're involved with. And then that sort of grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. So that is like super, super important, you know, I believe, the sort of whole peer-to-peer space. And even if you're looking at things like balls and galas, I mean, every table that you sell, which I guess you can't really do now in COVID time, but every table that you sell, what we want is the data of every person on that table to be a potential donor. We don't want you taking 10 tickets and not knowing who's coming. And now you can't have ball and gala, so what can you do? Like, don't say, look, we can't raise money. What about a virtual event where every table is a potential fundraising champion? So every table is almost like a fundraising team, if you like. But you can go ahead and you can create the fundraising pages for them. You know, you can create the virtual event for them. You can incentivize them and encourage them to go out and to fundraise amongst their clients and their friends and their family. You can put on the speaker or whatever you were going to do at the function online. Yeah, it's not the same, but we're trying to work with what we have here.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I think you've, you've shared some really, really good insights for us today, Tanya, and I really appreciate your time. I know with My Cause you've got thousands of charity partners, and so you're obviously seeing lots of what's happening. So just to finish on, as we look, you know, we're in the beginning now of 2022. What do you see as being, you know, one of the most promising trends in digital fundraising that you anticipate for the coming year that our small charity listeners can perhaps take advantage of?
I think there's no turning back digital fundraising. I mean, if you weren't on the boat before, you certainly need to be now. But for a small organisation, you need to get the basics right. So the basics are donate now button top right-hand side of your fundraising page, an embedded donation form inside your site. You might have what we call impact labels on that form that might say something like $25 buys this, $50 buys that, and a good informative website as well. And then also peer-to-peer fundraising ability on your website, super important, where people can just click to create a fundraising page. But remember that people don't just wake up in the morning and say, who can I fundraise for? And they certainly don't wake up in the morning and say, where can I send my money? So you have to be still doing that low-hanging fruit marketing. So, oh, it's your birthday. Would you like to pledge your birthday to our charity? Oh, it's running season. You know, we're putting in a team. You know, we're doing a virtual run team because, of course, there's not so many events. You know, whatever it might be, but you've got to work it. And usually you'd be using your social media or your email to be doing that. And then the next thing is the next step up from the peer-to-peer is to then, of course, run your own appeals. And if you're currently just running a small perhaps mail-out appeal, then perhaps consider expanding that online as a digital appeal. Perhaps a match giving day is right for you depending on your database and your capacity. And then I would say the your own peer-to-peer event, where it's your own fully branded event, would be appropriate in some circumstances but not all circumstances. So perhaps the starting point is to try to incentivize and put in a team or a group in a third-party event, although virtual. So what you can do is we'll send you a T-shirt, we'll do this, we'll support you, and sort of learn how to do that marketing piece to the fundraisers, but just using the third-party event as the actual structure for people to do their running or whatever. And by the way, you don't need to link to those third-party events. Everybody knows how to go and buy a ticket in the Melbourne Marathon. Don't send your web traffic to somebody else's website. These are your people. Keep them inside your ecosystem and let them fundraise inside your ecosystem on a branded page for you, not for anybody else. So that's sort of the next stepping stone. And then I'm seeing the giving days and appeals as just getting bigger and bigger and more swish and polished and more digital. Because also don't forget, you know, post costs a lot of money. And if you're not activating your digital channels, you're only doing half the job.
Yeah, definitely.
With regard to digital, though, you know, you do need people that are expert at how to run digital. You don't want to be, you know, boosting Facebook posts is not really, doesn't really work. And also things like, you know, what we call spray and pray. So spray and pray is where you might run an ad where you target, I don't know, women between 45 and 60 in northern New South Wales. Well, you know, that also doesn't work for fundraising. So you have to be a lot more targeted. So what we're doing is we would be targeting people that have visited your website, people on your database. So the ads are actually being served to people that we know are open to your organisation. So you do need a little bit of expertise to run that sort of thing. But the good thing about it is that you can see your return on investment. So you know what you spend and you should know exactly what you're getting back on your e-commerce tracking. And there's plenty of companies out there that can assist with that sort of thing as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Tanya. That's some really fabulous tips and insights in there. And as always, your advice and your expertise is really appreciated here at Small Nonprofit Alliance. And we really value our partnership with this with mycause.com.au. So thank you as well for that and for your time today. And I wish you a wonderful year ahead. And let's hope it's much less lockdown and much more fruitful for everybody.
Thanks so much, Bianca.